Hey.
The sun was low in the west by the time they saw the lake, its waters glimmering red and gold, bright as a sheet of beaten copper. When they glimpsed the turrets of the inn above some willows, Dunk donned his sweaty tunic once again and stopped to splash some water on his face. He washed off the dust of the road the best he could and ran wet fingers through his thick mop of sun-streaked hair. There was nothing to be done for his size or the scar that marked his cheek, but he wanted to make himself appear somewhat less of the wild robber knight.
Real.
He's working against everything he's got by trying to look less.
Walking up to the edge of a lake to slosh dirty water through your hair.
Don't be ashamed. Just try to get Dunk
the right answer when you... Oh, jeez.
Trying to look a little presentable, like he belongs there.
He didn't hit any knots, apparently, or George felt fit to leave that out. So good for him. Can't be that long.
So true.
Welcome to part two of The Mystery Night.
So excited. We've had such an exciting week. The vibes are high. We're fresh off the trailer. And now we get to dive back into Dragon Talk.
So the Dance of Dragons, 129 to 131 AC. And this is around 221 to 225, 224 AC.
There you go. So 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
Loved getting back with our boys. It had been too long. Like I said, Dunk does not need to make himself look less. Just go in there.
So what does he do in that scenario?
I understand that you got to put
Knowing
a shirt on.
Knowing how it went in the inn, like, what's your best advice?
Potentially, if he had come into the inn a little bit more menacing and powerful, she would have been like, of course we've got space.
So dirty hair.
Yeah.
Goes in that.
Maybe she has space. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So. But it was good. This is a really good stretch of pages. I felt like one thing that we love so much about this series that we've been reading is just the hangs and just all the time and space between what we would deem as action. And so, I mean, like I said, we're coming fresh off Trailer Talk, which is like back to back to back. Hitting big points. So it's kind of fun to dive back into a text and have these long, drawn-out conversations. When we were in the middle of reading, we ended up reading probably like, what, a page extra than we had originally planned to read. Because it was like, what happened? Like, nothing happened. They had some good chats. We enjoyed the ambiance.
Reinforcing my feelings about the reds and the blacks.
Yeah. But I think the last couple of paragraphs.
You must choose. Everyone must choose.
I know. I was having, I was like, wow, that is so timely. But the ambiance, a 10 out of 10. And it's nice to be back with our boys.
Reading about the reds and the blacks. Right off of the you must choose.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Can you take something that's got such a sacred vibe around it, like whom's his and thou's fantasy, and then stuff like the Clegane Bowl comes out of it, like the greens versus the blacks or the reds versus the blacks in this moment. It could seem kind of cheesy, but I think what it is it's hard to really imagine what those people were like inside the forest, talking around a campfire with midges all around. Mm-hmm. They're most certainly talking about both sides, even if they speak in weird old accents. It's a weird sounding meal.
Whatever neeps are.
We don't eat a lot of that. It sounds like it would be in the Game of Thrones, A Song of Ice and Fire official cookbook.
Just soaking beef jerky, basically.
I don't think it sounds too bad, but it's a great way to travel with protein. They're just trying to stay alive. And it's the least amount of weight that you could carry, probably, for the amount of protein that you get. To be eating classically made food like that, but for there to be the sort of modern perspective about what's happening is what did happen in history and is what would have happened in this fake history, in our own history. Mm-hmm. There were people just talking. Their language might have sounded a lot weirder than ours, and it might have sounded a lot more proper. Like, people really talked like that? Yeah, but they also talked shit about what was happening at that time. Yeah. And so to get sort of like Hollywood, this person versus this person, modern, air quotes, modern sensibility out of something that's supposed to have this sort of sacred edge to it, seems like it's a little cheesy. Then you're like going into the realm of cheesiness, almost like a parody. You're trying to make something funny, or you're trying to go the shortcut way to trigger the bell inside of someone's mind that's looking at the story now going, oh, I get that. It's a little bit more genius of storytelling to make something that's supposed to be sacred have this edge to it that you recognize, mm-hmm. but in a natural way. You wouldn't normally go between the times of the stuff happening, but we are right now. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty cool that out of a fantasy book, you can hear these people that are legitimate characters talk like they could be alive right now. Right. That's the dumbest way to put it, but I think you get what I'm saying.
For sure. It makes me think of all the translations of the Bible.
Yeah, exactly. all the
new translations. Let's make it hip and cool for the kids.
I guess compared to the Dead Sea Scrolls, King James is like a TikTok post.
Probably. Yeah. But then compared to, I'm not going to dunk on any specific translations, but it's just very interesting.
People don't like to give credit to how normal the things that they respect from the past were.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
It also makes me think of the hit HBO show John Adams, where
they're
talking so austere the whole time.
The thing about it that makes it funny is John Adams is resisting all normality.
Right.
He's trying to make it this global historical moment.
But he's
the
still
time.
Yeah, exactly. In an era for us of Hamilton vibes.
Sure.
To read some it's easy to connect when they're speaking your language. And George has always done, in my opinion, some of the best in fantasy, bridging the divide between this is high fantasy. We're talking about dwarves and knights and dragon eggs. But we're also one thing that he does really well, again, we're learning so much random stuff about all these different people in history that are seemingly important at different points in time that for sure will come up in some sort of fandom quiz, but it is not cumbersome. We're not wading through names and places in order to make the world feel
big. It's definitely
big.
Lighter and dunk an egg.
Yeah, it's fun.
For sure.
It's fun. So I can't remember why we got onto all of that, but I really liked the energy of their kind of campfire hangs and the info that they pittered back and forth, and so did Dunk and Egg enough for them to go to the journey.
True. That's a good point. Yeah. They're changing their mind. I like the context about Bittersteel and Daemon Blackfire. I can almost imagine them across the narrow sea just mm-hmm. biding their time and waiting to come mm-hmm. over. The way that these guys, they're just laying down in smoke, rattling on about it. Like friends like my dad used to have when I was a kid.
Yeah.
They all kind of look the same.
We also, like we said, we get a lot of Blood Raven references in here. And Dunk is like, guys, stop saying bad stuff. I don't want to be the one.
True.
The government is listening right now. I wasn't part of this whole thing. Don't include me in this. I guess the government is listening in egg, but.
So Quentin Ball's son, the Fireball, he taught my father and my uncles how to fight, the great bastards too. King Egan promised to raise him to the Kingsguard, so Fireball made his wife join the Silent Sisters. Don't know why he did that ahead of time. Only by the time a place.
I can guess.
Only by the time a place came open, King Egan was dead and King Darren named Sir William Wilde. Instead, my father says that it was Fireball as much as Bittersteel who convinced Daemon Blackfire to claim the crown and rescued him, and Daeron sent the King's Guard to arrest him. Later on, Fireball killed Lord Lefford at the gates of Lannisport and sent the Grey Lion running back to hide inside the rock. At the crossing of the Mander, he cut down the sons of Lady Penrose one by one. They say he spared the life of the youngest one as a kindness to his mother. Just another domino in this whole thing happening at all. So his son's among the Chill Squad in the forest right now. And he's headed, sharpening his sword, only cracking a smile when Egg speaks in the right way, mm-hmm. to the tourney as well.
Regain some of his father's glory.
While Dunk is chasing down Gorman Peak as well.
I am so excited to get back into the tourney vibe. I loved, well, if we do, I loved that about the first book in the series. Mm-hmm. It's just the Game of Thrones season one banners flying everywhere and that old school brass tacks fantasy vibe. So I'm super excited to go if they make it to a tourney. Not as excited as I am for them to go to Winterfell, but still excited about what that might look like.
A nostalgic way to end the Dunk and Egg series.
Yes.
Open at the close.
After being in such a random place for so long. In book two.
Yeah.
You know? Listen, there's a ton of... We were going through, before we started recording, like I said, all the kings. What order we're in. Because, like I said, we've been in kind of Fire and Blood vibe the last little while. And we haven't done Dunk and Egg in a little while. So I'm trying to, reorient myself in the timeline. And there's a lot of characters there, and there's a lot of material there. So we will not run short, even in this chapter. And we'll talk more about Duncan Egg a little bit at the end of the episode, after we talk about the chapter, the TV show, I mean. But even in this chapter, something that I think is so cool that we talk about a lot is all these randos that we get to meet along the way that info dump on us just stuff about the world, about these storied knights and these families that they're from and who they did or didn't fight for and their prejudices, all of those things being channeled through just random besties for the night kind of situations.
The Fellowship of the Hedge.
Yeah, which quickly was dismantled the next morning. I loved that line.
The Fellowship of the Hedge did not last the night.
They're like, oh man, well, I guess our boys aren't our boys anymore.
They were so close the night before, though.
Haven't you been in that situation 100 times?
Oh, yeah.
Like, this is the night of my life.
We're all passing around wedded beef together. Uh-huh.
And then the next morning, you can't really look at each other in the eye. Nothing happened, but you're just like, yeah, it's not really
there.
You get
better at that as you get older.
So true. But we get to meet some cool boys along the way. And as always, watching Egg kind of interact with all the information that's being spilled around him, even Dunk notices just the change in his temperament. But as the reader, that has continued to be one of my favorite pieces about this Dunk and Egg series as a whole. I find that to be so fun.
So where do you think we're going with the last published Dunk and Egg story, knowing that it was good enough for HBO to greenlight it as a TV series?
When we talk about, like, where this is going.
Yeah, it's the last story. How do you?
Like I said, I want to go to the wall.
The trilogy.
All men need to be made of the wall. Okay. So if Egg is going to go on to be a great man, then he needs to be made at the wall. Obviously, Blood Raven playing a big role.
A little mention.
Just another little thing about him. So, like, is something big going to happen with him at the end of this chapter? I don't think so, because what do I not know about Blood Raven from, like, a huge spoilery standpoint? But I don't know. I guess we'll find out. The most intriguing thing to me is at the very end of this chapter, and this is probably nothing, but they're talking about the dragon eggs, and Dunk is making a quip about, well, maybe I can get a dragon egg and we can both have them. And Egg gave him a doubtful look. What? Why are you looking at me that way? I could tell you, sir, the boy said solemnly, but I need to learn to hold my tongue. Which could be nothing, but to me alludes to who you need to be in order to hatch an egg or to be able to, like, have that ability, which has always been an interesting topic of discussion. And so
it's about to be really interesting on Hot D too.
Exactly.
At the end of this next season.
So it really kind of caught my eye. And as we're thinking about, like, okay, well, Daenerys is coming along in, like, 100 years from now. So they're talking about prophecy, about dragons hatching again, all the type of thing. And so I know that that doesn't necessarily play a huge role as far as I know about where the story is going to go.
I think it does.
But yeah.
I think it does, because I think that a lot of folks boil things down to George potentially not writing fast enough, and I just don't think it's that simple. And I think that when in our real life Duncan Egg was published, and also where it lands in the timeline of the published books from Song of Ice and Fire, you've got Fire and Blood, Fire and Blood 2 that's coming, that's going to go further between those eight kings that you were alluding to, between Fire and Blood and Duncan Egg. And we have the original Game of Thrones TV series to go off of, right? But we still don't have the book series published. And a lot of what Hot D is about to explore, the idea of all these people fighting and dying for you based off of following a law that was placed by people that was able to make a law because they had dragons, because they were able to take over everyone else. And dragons being the most modernized weapon there, the most powerful one, at least, at this time in Westeros. And so the people that control the dragons, are they doing it because they were blessed by God? Are these crazy reptiles that came from a time that had a lot more crazy animals? Right. We have that context from the series, and they're just left over, and we're just training them like dogs. Right. Like, why do you have this power? I think that why people have power, and there's a whole greater conversation attached to it, and why we all follow the rules that are happening right now, that those points are getting further and further driven into our brains through the main series, the Duncan Egg series, through Hot D. by the time they've all had their say, I think we might get the final say from the book series.
Mm-hmm. Sure, because that's so
just
kind
more
of,
context.
That's kind of at least feels like one of the climax storylines that we're building to in A Song of Ice and Fire is these additional dragon riders that Daenerys is going to potentially be able to utilize.
Right.
And so, yeah.
Or someone might be able to steal one of her dragons.
Right,
you know?
Right. So I think that's
it's
why
all happening in Meereen right now.
That's why the dragon seed storyline in Hot D is so interesting.
It's
to
crazy.
Me. How they're going to portray that on screen, because I think that yeah, could be some precedent too.
You just get desperate and you have a bunch of extra dragons, and so now all of a sudden all these randos can ride dragons.
But they're also not really randos, though. That's the thing that's interesting, is that they're not totally randos.
But they're also not all actual seeds that can ride the dragons.
That's
true. And so that brings a lot of ideas into question. And so are you just really desperate? You need more men that now they can ride dragons? And when they do ride dragons, what happens? We see in Fire and Blood. Things don't go their way.
Right.
Those people end up turning their backs. We can be spoilery because this is not a trailer episode.
I know. I was going to say.
But they turn their backs. And do we have to put some kind of magical familial idea on this whole technology so we can lock it down, keep it as safe as possible? You know, do we propel the myth further and lock everyone else away from it, from its potentiality? So driving toward that idea of what's real, what's just in our heads in the context of a fantasy series, dealing with the most powerful technology that's going to end up being that versus what looks like actual magic with the White Walkers or some kind of strange, ancient animal that's weirder than dragons that has like metaphysical capabilities versus each other. And so this has been a decades long point to drive forward, decades long mystery to drive forward. But you can see, at least in 2003, the supplemental content asking yourself, the reader, asking the question, you know, how much do these people really matter? We see Egg being bothered about someone talking bad about his dad. That bothers us.
Right.
So we at least care about that. So it's like mixing in those emotions that you have for people plus the emotions that you have about the audacity certain people take when they claim power for themselves.
Mm-hmm. With the context of having the Hot D situation not be that far
removed
in
from
distant
this.
Memory.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's like a catastrophic thing that their living family members can speak to, and that all of their power was disintegrated due to XYZ and their greed. So like how that could be interesting about how that then changes the way that people discuss dragons. But I mean, Egg kind of mentions the prophecy very briefly, like it's going to happen again.
Yeah, he believes it. So he might be a zealot, whereas a lot of people were probably demystified after the dragon pit, after they were all able to throw their bodies at those four dragons. And then, talks of other folks that weren't direct Targaryens being able to ride the dragons. But maybe it's been long enough at this point where there's zealots that don't really have like the trust of the main people. They're believing in something that could be potentially be mysterious because it happened so long ago. Who really knows what the right answer is? And so it comes down to right now in the main storyline in A Song of Ice and Fire is what's happening around this moment with Dany and Jon Snow and Tyrion and most importantly, the White Walkers, the only thing that really pulls it away from all these other squabbles. Because all these other squabbles, if you looked at the history of America, everything from the 1700s leading up until, you know, the Civil War felt like that they were the most important things that could possibly happen. And that's how, you know, the time between probably Maegor and the end of the Blackfyre Rebellions, maybe even Robert, like felt. It all felt like it was the most important time, but we're sitting at the most important time in the Song of Ice and Fire series because there's actual White Walkers and there's a door in the wall that has the face of a weirwood tree and can speak to you. Cold hands, etc.
I swear to you,
Leaf.
If in the end of this book they're like, by the way, I have to tell you about something that someday we must protect these walls because someday the song of ice
and you
and
hear
fire,
a small cry in the distance.
He pulls out Cat's Paw. He's like, I got to show you something.
Cat's Paw.
I need you to to protect the song of ice and fire. But no,
maybe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but maybe. We forget. Like, that's the point of all of this. Like you're saying, that's the point is where we are in Game of Thrones.
So if all of that's happening, and if it is real enough for the White Walkers to exist, and it's as important as the rest of these, but the White Walkers are there, maybe what's happening with Dany and her dragons is the magical thing. Doesn't seem fitting though, but that's all this evidence for us to mine all these details out of, like it's a mystery and like we're detectives. But in 03, this was the evidence that was available still.
Wow, from before, from under the cork tree.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very interested to see what these eggs may or may not look like in person. Also, why does this random guy have one? I mean, we know why he has it potentially, but there's no way that it's real.
I mean, it might be. Think? Sure. I mean, the story was, let me read the actual story from this chapter.
The story was that he came and slept with all of his daughters.
I know, but so he left three of them.
So he's like, I need to make sure.
You need to really
it. It was pretty funny the way he described it.
From the book. The dragon's egg. Is that the champion's prize? Truly? The last dragon had perished half a century ago. Sir Arlen had once seen a clutch of her eggs, though. They were hard as stone, but beautiful to look upon. The old man had told Dunk. How could Lord Butterwell come by a dragon's egg? King Aegon presented the egg to his father's father after guesting for a night at his old castle, said Sir Maynard Plum. Was it a reward for some act of valor? Asked Dunk. Sir Kyle chuckled. Some might call it that. Supposedly, old Lord Butterwell had three young maiden daughters when his grace came calling. By morning, all three had royal bastards in their little bellies. A hot night's work, that was. Dunk had heard such talk before. Aegon the Unworthy had bedded half the maidens in the realm and fathered bastards on the lot of them. Supposedly worse, the old king had legitimized them all upon his deathbed. The base-born ones, born of tavern wenches, whores, and shepherd girls, and the great bastards whose mothers had been highborn. We'd all be bastard sons of the old king if half those tales were true. And who's to say we're not? Sir Maynard quipped. So that's why he got the egg.
I know,
but three of his maiden daughters. He could trade that for so much more stuff, but when the king comes a knocking.
It was so long ago.
It was what we were talking about. It was enough between the times of the far away from time of the dragon where he was like, we have so many of these spare eggs. Like, can I just give this guy one of the eggs? It's not going to matter that much.
Yeah, but also far enough away that nobody'd seen one barely. So it's like, I have this really cool rock. So let me see what it's like.
I mean, we could go into further detail of what his experience could have been like, but I think it's pretty obvious. He just was probably too drunk and just gave it away. Why did he have it with him? Who knows?
Well, maybe if one of his kids were born, he was like, man, I'd want them to have an egg.
Oh, true.
Crib,
yeah.
Potentially.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, give it to the boy.
Yeah. He can start flying. So anyway, fishy, I would say.
So that's why would you give it away? As mysterious. Okay, cool.
Well, because why would you give it away?
I don't know.
That is invaluable. Yeah. Like, you cannot put a price tag on that. Mm-hmm. So what is this tourney for? His wedding? So he can maybe get an heir?
Yeah.
What's his name? Sir Butterball or whatever?
Lord Butterwell.
Like, I don't know. Okay. Listen, I know he's trying to do it up. I know he really wants a son. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want his family name to die alongside him. I get it. My brother carries that weight. But giving away a dragon's egg, that just seems so drastic. So
I'm with you on that. Yeah.
I'm very interested to see how that unfolds and plays out. And A, is it real? I guess we would never know because it's not going to hatch. Potentially, right? There's no way. B, would there be some squabbles over who is the rightful owner of it, potentially, if the tourney is not straightforward? So that's kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
But it's enough of an intrigue where Dunk and A can't miss it. They have to go. They're going to go. They got to see what's going on.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that is a pretty big deal.
Yeah. Well, Dunk's even like, I've never even seen one. I've heard tales of people who've talked about them. And Egg's like, meh. You want to see mine?
Lord Butterwell will have the egg well guarded, I'm sure. Dunk is doing what you're doing. Yeah. He's kind of geeking out over the idea of there being a dragon's egg there. Dunk scratched the midge bites on his neck. Do you think he might display it at the feast? I'd like to get a look at one. Egg says, I'd show you mine, sir, but it's at Summerhall. Casual.
Bracker.
Casual. I'd show you mine, but
I like how Dunk is, he's like, I forget that this kid is legit, that he's a prince. And that is the sign of royalty more so than anything else. So where else are random eggs hid out among the land? That's another thing of interest, potentially.
That's a YouTube video, I bet. That's, I know, about 15 of them.
I know. Listen, everybody can write in. You guys know better than me. Send me some links. Send me the conspiracy theories. But where are the other? There's, if this rando has an egg.
Oh, geez.
Where else are more?
How cool would it be if the wall gets destroyed and the White Walkers cross, that they all get triggered, and the ones that are, you know, not too damaged or not too cold of a place are able to hatch?
The dragon at Winterfell? Is that what you're talking about?
Let's go.
Well, I don't know. Like I said, the whole dragon seed thing, I know that they're riding born dragons that are just need to be claimed. But
and some born with them.
How all of that works in and context.
What
of
the
this.
Real fact is.
Super interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, watch is going to be glossed over. I'm going to be so disappointed.
It might be part of the mystery that never gets solved that helps give this story so much life, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's expensive as hell to cross this ferry.
Prices have gone up. Inflation.
10 coppers for the mule, 10 coppers for the horse. Doesn't matter if it's a mule or horse, even if the mule is a lot smaller. We got to shout it out to the food at the inn. A good smell was drifting out of the windows of the inn, one that made Dunk's mouth water. We might like some of what you're roasting, if it's not too costly. It's wild boar, the woman said, well peppered and served with onions, mushrooms, and mashed neeps. We could do without the neeps. Some slices off the boar and a tankard of your good brown ale would do for us. How big is a tankard? I feel like we looked this up before. How much would you ask for that? And maybe we could have a place at your stable floor to bed down for the night?
He said all the wrong things to this lady. He said all the wrong things.
This is a popular inn. It's at a popular ferry stop. And so we don't have to be beggars about our customers. You have to buy a room here. You have to be a full-fledged customer to get part of our food.
And people have to stay here because they have to wait because this process takes so long.
God, can you imagine being so scum and you got to sleep out underneath the trees?
Yeah. I don't know. It might be better than some of those inns, to be honest with you. I don't know if that would be my speed.
See, at that point, it's sort of like my philosophy on the road and cheaper hotels.
Yes.
It's at that point, if we're already at an inn like this, what's that big of a difference between sleeping outside
by
the
midges? I would rather sleep outside.
Right.
1,000,000%. Because it's like every time you see one of these inns on TV or Les Mis, the movie that was in theaters for approximately one day last month. It's just gross. So sleep outside under the stars, hang out with your boys around the fire. I know that the bugs are eating you alive.
It's no Standfast. It's no tower room with a well at the bottom.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like relatively though, I want to talk to you about inns necessarily for a song fights and fire, but relatively, I think what we're supposed to feel is, you know, it sucks being hedge knight.
For sure.
But then like, look what cool moments can happen from that suckiness. The Fellowship of the Hedge. I mean, these are obvious points, but he wouldn't have gotten that if he would have been locked up in his room, belly full of nice boar.
Yeah, 100%.
No, honestly, you probably had better conversations with the lords. Probably would have been more productive instead of just talking to people that were talking about those lords.
Sure. I don't know. I kind of like the gossip aspect way more than being in the room with the wands, but that's just me personally.
That makes sense, yeah. I think both are fun.
But that's what I was kind of saying at the beginning of the episode is that that's what makes this series so great is because we're with the one.
Barely drinking in my Diet Coke, sorry.
But we're hanging on the side of the river on the road with just these other hedge knights who, yeah, like you said, there's definitely prejudice against them. And so what they can and can't do is limited. But Dunk loves life on the road, so he's bigger and taller than all of them. Mm-hmm. So he's probably got it better than most.
Sir Kyle, Sir Glendon Ball, Maynard Plum. What you think of the boys?
I thought it was so funny, the prejudices piece. Like we were saying, coming off the back of the Greens or the Blacks trailer, which one to have another reference to another comparable conflict that had a lot of lives lost on both sides and how thick and deep that resentment continues to run. Through people who just knew people who were there. They weren't even the ones that were involved necessarily. But again, kind of like we were talking about in the trailer episode, and as we've been talking about Wind, Fire, and Blood and House of the Dragon in general, it's like this idea of the sins of the fathers being carried out through their family line into these younger kids. And so I was just thinking about it in the context of what's the repercussion going to be like for the Greens and the Blacks conflict. if and when we see some of that fallout, probably not, because the show's gonna. Sure.
Oh, not in the show, though.
Not in the show.
Yeah.
Seeing the fallout of like that conflict and the party lines that have been drawn so deeply and how long lasting those effects are and the repercussions and how interesting it is that just a couple of decisions made by a couple guys who are at the top can completely affect the way generations even have conversations with each other.
Mm.
So that's kind of cool. Kind of cool to see their perspective. You got people from both sides trying to be nice to each other and trying to be chivalrous and kind and like, it's all good, so guys. Long. It's been so long. Like, yeah. Let's still be friends kind of situation. So, but as always, I just enjoy kind of some of the historical background and info dump, sort of. Not really.
I'm curious how that's going to be done in the TV show. Like, for moments like this, like, how much screen time will this area get in the TV show? Like, we'll probably get this conversation, and we'll get cuts back to whoever's playing Egg as he's fiddling around with the fire while people are talking about his family right in front of him.
And I wonder, too, this is a major stretch, but, man, people would be so upset if they, like, scanned over the Blackfyre Rebellion, and instead we're talking about, like, the Hot D era. And kind of reminiscing that conflict.
Sure.
I mean, I know it's been a decent amount of time, but it hasn't been generations. There's no way. People would be livid if they erased the Blackfyre Rebellion from the canon of the TV show when you have such a blatantly obvious opportunity to kind of touch on it.
But I think that's a really smart idea, though, because this isn't book one of the Night of the Seven Kingdoms series. So if they're adapting straight from what's published, this will be the tail end of the content. So this is our last chance to set up the Blackfyre Rebellion. Mm-hmm. And we know that that's what is happening. Mm-hmm. Or the next one. And we know that's what's happening through this story right now. And so if we're talking about the last one and we're setting it up, like, are we going to potentially go further than the published Duncan Egg stuff? In the TV series, if it's successful enough, do we get further toward that conflict and actually be inside of it? Or like we do in Hot D, or like how we do in Fire and Blood? Because we start from the founding of Westeros by Aegon the First, and then we do get to live in the moments, in the book at least, leading up to the first Dance of the Dragons. But this story doesn't get as close to it.
I mean,
no spoilers to you. We only have like a handful of pages left.
Whoa, really?
Well, I mean, we have half this book left, but in the context of the whole
yeah,
trilogy,
yeah, no, I get what you're saying.
Blackfyre Rebellion like isn't going to start next week, but also it kind of is. I'm trying to be the least amount of spoilers possible with what we talk about this book, but yeah, that's interesting. I don't know. I mean, they might just reference the Hot D stuff and sort of like let that take the place of it to live in the TV world.
It could be interesting. Curious. It could be interesting. But another thought kind of I had along that same vein. As we're thinking adaptation, I've been listening to Fire and Blood chapters like this past week, and I was shocked how much dialogue was lifted from that.
Exactly from it.
Exactly from that book.
Yeah.
That had not that much in it. And so when we think about adaptation here, it's been a very long time since we've had a real adaptation book to screen to even talk about or discuss since what? Season 4, season 3.
Some of season 5.
Some of season 5. But at that point, they were doing their own thing. So how fun is that? And
looking forward to it.
Because if they go down that route that they've been doing in Hot D to stay extremely true to the text, understand that they have a little bit more wiggle room. But like, what do they have to lose with this? They have all the content here. And like you said, there's opportunity to expand outside of this text because of what we know from just like history that's been published from this era.
It's like what they're doing with Fire and Blood.
Yeah.
It's loyal to the published work, but George is working on the story of Hot D. And so the stuff that comes extra, it doesn't come with the flavor of, without being too picky, like the later seasons of GOT, like the White Stag. So I would be open for it. Yeah. I'd be open for it here.
I would too, 1,000%.
And the Duncan Egg series. But I don't know if they're going to do that. I think that they might just do the three books straight. It's
probably because it's like three seasons, you know? That's like a solid amount of time.
I don't know that for sure yet.
Well, I know, but I'm assuming that I feel like each book is a pretty solid, neatly tied season.
Mm-hmm.
10 episodes, 8 episodes potentially.
If I'll just say this without spoiling the Mystery Knight, if they do make Duncan Egg the TV show like that, then people are going to want more between Game of Thrones and Duncan Egg.
For sure, but people are also going to want more at the end of House of the Dragon.
True.
I guess how are they going to handle that? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, like directly following.
But also, arguably, people are going to want stuff at the end of Game of Thrones. I mean, the TV show.
Yeah, it's a good problem to be in.
Like, y'all think I don't want to see what Bran is like up there on the Iron Throne in his day-to-day?
Yeah.
Come on.
I get it.
I guess we're going to get the Jon Snow show. So
true.
Anyway,
I think it'd be pretty powerful.
We had a whole episode about it.
Let's go.
That was so long ago, it feels like.
I also want to talk about the fairy setup. I don't know why I'm so obsessed with this fairy, but it's kind of like you talking about disaster movies where you like to see the setup and how they're surviving, like their garden and stuff like that. I like when devices like very specific places are introduced, like an inn at the crossroads, and I like to know about the way it works,
the pulley system, what kind of ropes you guys got.
It was like the innkeeper talking about their food and like just the way the hospitality works at this location. I was also really interested in the way that the boards are laid across the muddy ground, the walkway up to the door, the way that George described the door and the timber, the place itself. If this is going to be a place we're riding toward for a whole section, like a whole chapter, I want to feel it as up close as this. And he goes a step further by almost giving us the torture of living through, like, waiting in line. I've had to wait for ferries. And if it's a really long line, really popular pop in summer day, you're going to have to wait for – it's bad enough to wait for one ferry, but to have to wait for hordes of people that are in front of you and the ferry filling up for the next one. Mm-hmm. And we have to live through it in this chapter. It says, the next day proved the truth of Sir Kyle's prophecy. And Sir Kyle said at one point that all the lordlings would be able to go first, obviously. Ned's ferry was nowise large enough to accommodate all those who wished to cross, so Lords Costain and Shawnee must go first with their tails. That required several trips, each taking more than an hour.
Jeez.
And by the way, they're not going to a new food place. No, so they're still working off. Yeah. You couldn't survive in this. They're still working off the snacks of last night.
I could not survive.
There were the mud flats to contend with, horses and dragons to be gotten down the planks, loaded on the boat, and unloaded again. Oh, so tedious. Again, across the lake. The two lords slowed matters even further when they got into a shouting match over precedence. Shawnee was, honestly, that might be a time to speak up when you know how long it takes with the tales also. Shawnee was the elder, but Costain held himself to be better born. There was not that Dunk could do but wait and swelter. We could go first if you let me use my boot, Egg said. We could, Dunk answered, but we won't.
Is that like what it's like being on entry level C on Southwest when you could be an A-lister?
Yeah, and you're
waiting at the back of the plane.
I also want to talk about the two moments that Dunk and Egg speak up in the conversation around the fire with the Knights of the Hedge. This is the first time the Egg speaks up. You have forgotten Prince Rhaegal, my friend, Sir Maynard objected in a mild tone. He comes next in line to Aerys, not Maekar, and his children after him. This is when those two guys were saying that Bloodraven's going to be the one to take over after the sickly king. Rhaegal is feeble-minded. Why, I bear him no ill will, but the man is good as dead. And those twins of his as well, though, whether they will die of Maker's mace or Bloodraven spells, Seven save us, Dunk thought, as Egg spoke up, shrill and loud.
Prince Maekar is Prince Rhaegal's brother. He loves him well. He'd never do harm to him or his.
And then later on in the conversation, Dunk decides to cut into the silence. I just think it's interesting, the two moments that they decided to show their hands, because for the most part, they were just letting these guys run their mouths.
Yeah, yeah. And Dunk commented on how proud he was of Egg.
A hush fell. Dunk could hear the soft crackle of the fire. He could feel midges crawling on the back of his neck. He slapped at them, watching Egg, willing him to be still. I was just a boy when they fought the red grass field, he said, when it seemed that no one else would speak. But I squired for a knight who fought with the red dragon and later served another who fought for the black. There were brave men on both sides. Brave men, echoed Kyle the Cat a bit feebly. Heroes, Glendon Ball turned his shield about so all of them could see the sigil painted there. He turns his shield. It's not an accident. A fireball blazing red and yellow across a night black field. I come from hero's blood. Your fireball, son, Egg said. You could see this at the end of the episode. That was the first time they saw Sir Glendon smile.
It's Ed Sheeran.
He's finally got a fan, a young fan, someone that's younger than him, and he looks up to him. He's a fan. Sir Kyle the Cat studied the boy closely. How can that be? How old are you? Quentin Ball died before I was born, Sir Glendon finished. But in me, he lives again. He slammed his sword back into the scabbard. I'll show you all White Walls when I claim the dragon's egg. Let's go. Meanwhile, Junk's like, I just need a place to piss. He's like, where's the bathroom in this place? Where's the wine?
That pre-tourney hype is real, and especially when there's a dragon egg on the line. So I hope it doesn't take long for us to get there, and I hope there's not a detour.
Speaking of detour, do you think there's any importance to them having this conversation in a grove of cut down werewoods?
That did, to me, that did give me pause. To me, I read that as a sign of just the passage of time, as a reminder of how much the world has changed. But that was probably my very basic skin.
That's way better than what I thought. Mine was way more basic. Mine was, this is a little hug from George R. R. Martin.
Oh, well, that's cute.
There's only three of these Dunkin' Egg books. So yeah. Every long conversation, every moment is important. Like riding the Standfast with you know who. Mm-hmm. Seems like it's random, but it's not random. But this might just be random. So let's make it feel like it might not be random
right.
by having them sitting on weirwood stumps, sure. which yeah. is a little hug, I felt like.
Yeah, that is cute. That
yours,
is sweet.
Yours is better, though.
I mean, who's to say? But they did make a big deal about sitting on those stumps. That was kind of sweet, the welcome that they gave.
The boy carried Dunk's helmet beneath one arm, sloshing with each step as he took. By then, the sun was a red memory in the west. Before the long, the trees opened up, and they found themselves in what must have once been a weirwood grove. Only a ring of white stumps and a tangle of bone-pale roots remained to show where the trees had stood when the children of the forest ruled Westeros. Just in case y'all forgot, all this stuff doesn't really matter because children of the forest used to hop around merrily mm-hmm. and be the only ones that lived in this place, singing songs and weaving magic in the night sky.
Will they return?
Will they return? Okay. You ready to do owns for this thing?
I am.
Lay them on me.
All right, my owns. I had one own that's kind of a weird one. It's super random, but we haven't talked about it yet, so I will use it. My own goes to Dunk reminiscing about his time on the high seas.
Oh, yeah.
They talk a little bit about the Greyjoys and...
Everyone's trying to stop them.
Yeah, yeah.
Starks, Lannisters, everyone's trying to drive them back out of the sea, back into the sea, rather.
They're like, if you want Krakens, go west. Deal with that instead of going to the wall. Dunk thinks to himself, the prospect of fighting Iron Men at sea was not one that Dunk relished. He had a taste of that on the White Lady, sailing from Dorne to Old Town, when he donned his armor to help the crew repel some raiders. The battle had been desperate and bloody, and once he'd almost fallen into the water. That would have been the end of him. I don't know why him falling into the water, like him remembering that he almost fell into the water.
It's funny.
It's funny to me because like that is a genuine fear and that is very scary. But it's so funny that he lived through this battle. It was desperate and bloody. But the thing that stands out to him the most is that he'd almost fallen into the water. I understand he has a lot of armor on and all the complications of that. But for whatever reason, I wrote LOL when I read it and it made me chuckle. So I'm going to give my own to Dunk and his fears of water.
Alrighty.
How can you do better than that one?
Your fireball, son.
What a little nerd.
Your fireball, son. Second own to their salt beef. I think it's, from a technical perspective, logistical perspective, a pretty good idea.
And tastes like leather.
I'm glad they have it. Don't eat your own shoe. We're going to need that egg. Lord Butterwell will have the egg well guarded, I'm sure. Dunk scratched the midge bites on his neck. Do you think he might display it at the feast? I'd like to get a good look at one. I'd show you mine, sir, but it's at Summerhall owned. It's about as straight up as it gets. This is when Dunk was telling Egg to watch out for Maynard Plum while he was that long day of everyone waiting for the fairies. Half of them were talking to the lords outside. Maynard Plum's gossiping with the innkeep. He says, those common men can be dangerous when they get it in their heads to start slaying lords and heroes. Dunk saw the fairy creeping slowly across the lake. Here comes Egg to Dunk. It's slow. Are we going to go to White Wall, sir? Why not? I want to see this dragon's egg. Dunk smiled. If I win the tourney, we'd both have dragon's eggs.
That would be incredible. Two besties with dragon eggs.
All right. That's it for our owns. We're going to move on to some that we got from y'all ages ago. But owns, much like a fine arbor gold, get better with time. Mm-hmm. You like that? So first up on Twitter.
Straight Savage Cole, owned to Egg for learning to hold his tongue, even if he was cheeky about it. I'm surprised Dunk didn't give him a clout in the air for it.
And from Ghost Chase Killa, owned to Maynard Plum for being fun and snarky. Who's to say we're not? And owned to Dunk for once again being a good judge of character.
At Absolutely Connor, owned to Egg for asking to eat his own boots and make a new pair out of the salt beef since it's tougher before adding that his feet could only improve the taste of the beef. Dunk and Egg are in dire need of a decent meal.
You see that picture from the illustration from the book?
Mm-mm.
Oh, God. There's him sitting in the trough with his feet.
Oh, really? Yeah. I don't need to see
if you've been traveling on the road that long. Like, you could get good seasoning with some proteins in it. Oh,
listen.
From your feet.
Yeah, that's gross. So leave me out of it. I don't need to see the pic. I'm good.
Thanks to the three of you for sending in your owns for this chapter.
If you listening at home want to send in your owns for either this handful of pages or the House of the Dragon news or anything, send them our way. You can find us at Game of Owns on Instagram or Twitter, or send us an email to contact@gameofowns.com. We may or may not check it.
On our next episode of the podcast, The Mystery Knight, Part 3. And we'd like to leave you with a little bit of heartwarming news from the Dunk and Egg TV series project. The latest established rumors on the internet swirling around. Hannah's looking at me skeptically, but we've already talked about this, so I know this is going to end well. Pre-production for The Hedge Knight will start in April 2024. So in a couple days, maybe. And the production code name for The Hedge Knight is Sweetfoot.
Oh, I had not seen that yet.
So we might be in good hands, is all I'm saying.
That is so awesome. I'm so excited.
So thanks for listening. We got a lot of cool stuff to talk about. Thanks for hanging out with me, Hannah. We'll see y'all on the next one.
See you guys soon.